Welcome to our Microsoft Ignite special, episode 196 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live September 21st, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss different topics or news and how it relates to you. In this slightly longer episode, Scott and Ben talk all things Microsoft Ignite. We were able to get our hands on some of these announcements a little bit early, so we discuss some of our favorite announcements. We talk about some announcements that if you haven't seen already, you should definitely go back and check out. And we even do a little bit of speculation on what some of these announcements may mean, as we weren't always given the full details pre-Ignite about what all they entailed. So, without further ado, here is our discussion on the Microsoft Ignite announcements. I am definitely missing the excitement of Ignite in years past.
This would have been a nice break from the regular, but we shall persevere and continue in our COVID ways with Ignite and prep everybody for hopefully some exciting things yes. that have been announced there.
And as typical, even though this is COVID, we still have media stuff. So we are able to record this on Monday before Ignite. So Ignite actually starts tomorrow. This will be released after Ignite. So we will try to fill in details that we think are going to be exciting, that people are going to want to check out. To be fair, we don't have all of the details. Like, we get fair amount of high-level information, but we don't always get all the juicy technical details. So there is always some speculation on our parts of what some of these announcements actually will entail.
Yes, yeah. I think in general, there's some... We were talking about this beforehand, before we started recording, but, you know, from a themes perspective, I looked through the... You know, holistically, you look at all the announcements that are coming, and I think one of the things that you're going to see this year, and it certainly seems to be borne out by some of the press releases and things like that, is that there's a lot of incremental movement and not a lot of monumental changes within, you know, various platforms and services that exist. So things like Azure, you know, there's a lot of celebration around features that are, to be frank, already in preview today. They're kind of here and they're being vetted. Same thing with M365. There's, you know, there are things that are new, but a lot of this is an iterative motion to get this stuff out there and certainly keep it in front of everyone in the public so that they continue to potentially consume these services while they are in preview and provide feedback and get those things to where they need to be. So it's not to say there's not new things, but, you know, a lot of it's not going to sound potentially as new and exciting as it has in the past.
Right. Like, and I noticed that as I was reading through more on I spent more time in the M365 side of reading through that in a little more detail, but I felt like every other announcement, I was like, well, I think I already know about that. Either it was already pushed out to the Microsoft 365 roadmap, or there was already some precursory announcements around that. And now it's just taking a bigger stage. So, and it's possible some of this stuff is new to some people. Like, to be fair, I watch the Microsoft 365 roadmap religiously. I have an RSS feed. I see everything hit that as soon as it hits that. There's some of this stuff that will probably be new to some people if they don't watch the Microsoft 365 roadmap that religiously for any updates and changes and additions to it.
Yeah.
I think you'll also find that some of this kind of leaks out here and there, but Ignite is the place Microsoft always comes to get the latest update. So this is by far their biggest, I would say their biggest stage and the biggest media splash that they get to either re-announce or announce some of these in a more grandiose fashion than what might show up in like the product roadmap or a blog post, or every once in a while stuff gets announced via tweet that we notice.
Oh, for sure. Where do you want to start with this one?
I don't know. We have 71 pages of announcements.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to start with the one that made me laugh, the one that we were talking about first?
Sure.
The V3 of a product.
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean,
so I like this one in that it's bringing some features that people have been asking for a long time. I don't like it in the way that they're bringing the features. So Microsoft Stream, I don't know if I'd call this V3 or V2. There is a new version of Microsoft Stream that has been announced. That's our new announced thing. If it's from Ignite, is announced.
Okay.
It's Monday.
Announcements. I got it.
Did you get it? Okay. Anyways, a new version.
Title.
A new version of Stream that's going to bring the two big things that I saw there is it sounds like external sharing is actually finally going to work. Because I know we've all experienced where you record a meeting in Teams, it goes into Stream, and then you as a guest or an external user want to watch said recording and it doesn't work because external sharing does not work in Stream. Yes. That is going to be coming as part of this announcement, as well as it sounds like anonymous external viewing. So think you could actually use Stream for, like, instead of putting it on YouTube or Vimeo or one of those, you could leverage Stream. One thing that isn't included is how licensing is going to work. I can imagine there might be some licensing changes here.
That's a bit of a a bit of a black box there, right? Is potentially what that looks like along the way, because licensing, you know, external users like B2B users in your tenant, that's a little bit easier to capture. You can potentially do that kind of how they do maybe other licensing today with B2B. Yep. But anonymous, like, what's that gonna look like?
Right. I mean, it's, and it's also not like a web server. I mean, anonymous IIS users or anonymous users serving up a web page, it's a relatively small amount of content compared to when you start talking something like streaming video to an unlimited number of anonymous users. There's some, I mean, it's the cloud. Resources are unlimited, but you still have, someone still has to pay for those resources to be able to do things like that. So I can imagine that there's going to be an increased load on the servers, which could translate to some new license. I don't know. This is more speculation on our part. And go pay attention to that announcement and see how some of that stuff falls out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. So I think you always have to, you know, read between the lines on some of these too. And particularly with that, you know, you think about some of the content management features that you might want from SharePoint. Now that you're potentially opening to external and anonymous, you're likely integrating with the graph in some new and different ways. That's also going to bring integrations for Microsoft Search, which, you know, starts to be a little bit more interesting because, you know, if you think about, like, call it Stream V2, you know, having the ability to have transcripts playing in real time. And what does that mean when we need to go search through transcripts? I think it's kind of exciting to see where that one's going. I like that the announcement, they at least call out that they're building migration tools and potentially guidance here, because it does sound like a net new service. And, you know, there is going to be that motion of getting potentially your data out of what was Stream V1 and you got into Stream V2 and you kind of upgraded and moved to channels and teams and groups and all the things. And now you got to get it, you know, over the line again.
Great. Which is still kind of funny because I think Office 365 video is still hanging around too. I don't think that's been officially deprecated or killed off yet. Maybe we'll see something about that finally being deprecated too. I think for a while it's been sitting there and everybody's like, get everything off into Stream. But I'm pretty sure both of those are still around. Well, I know Stream is obviously still around. I don't know about Office 365 video. I'm pretty sure it's still live.
I mean, they announced that there was going to be that automatic migration from 365 video to Stream on, that was supposed to happen in March of 2020.
Was it? Maybe it did happen and maybe I missed it, or maybe they delayed it with COVID, because
it was supposed to happen, but I didn't keep up with that one. So but all the apps are retired and those things. So you had the option, if you were in a tenant, to delay. The longest you can delay is until March 1st, 2021. And on March 1st, 2022, all your redirection of old O365 video links to Microsoft Stream is going to stop and halt.
Got it.
So I imagine if this, you know, does manifest as a net new service, you'll see a similar kind of multi-year timeline to move all that stuff.
Yep. But yeah, I do like that. It sounds like the migration is hopefully going to be pretty seamless with that one.
It's one of the more upfront ones where, you know, migration tools are called out, which that's a good thing.
Yes. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. So do you want to keep going in the Microsoft 365 space with things that I pulled out, or do you want to take turns jumping back and forth?
No, let's keep going. Teams probably makes sense next.
Teams, yeah. So from the Microsoft 365 standpoint, I would say if there's any theme of Ignite, it is Teams. And kind of specifically how it ties into the whole work from home thing. As you may have already seen, when the whole COVID thing hit, Microsoft kind of took two different approaches to it. And some of the materials that we have, they talk about this a little bit, where obviously there's that big increase in usage. They started to see how people really leverage Teams, what people were using in Teams, stuff that had to be improved in Teams. We've seen a lot of feature improvements and even feature announcements over the last 6 months, frankly, because of Teams and working from home. But Microsoft also took the approach of, you know what, let's really learn from this. Let's learn how, when the entire world starts working from home pretty much, what impact does that have on health? What impact does it have on usage? So they've also been running a bunch of studies around how people use Teams, how much, when people are sending messages, when people are responding to emails, how long people's work days seem to be, just by the fact of when are they logged into Teams or having conversations on Teams or sending chat messages on Teams. That's all telemetry that they can see. While they can't see the details of those, they can see what people are using and when they're using it and all of that. And they have incorporated some features and they're making some announcements around Teams kind of due to the health stuff. They talk about, this one was interesting to me, a virtual commute that you'll now be able to set up within your, not necessarily Teams, but just Microsoft 365 environment, where they found how much a commute for a lot of people helped them to decompress after a workday. And this is when we don't have a lot of details around either, how it's going to actually manifest itself. But they're building in like features to set up virtual commutes, or I'm guessing it's like a virtual do not disturb at the beginning and end of each day, where you can't get any interruptions, where you can just kind of sit, decompress, wrap up your day. That's one that they talked about. They're also partnering with, I believe it was Headspace, to introduce like some features that allow you to like take breaks in the middle of the day, have some short sessions of meditation, or just breaks from the constant influx of work that's hitting you, and how much when people are just isolated, apparently they don't take breaks like they maybe would to go grab a cup of coffee or just go have water cooler conversations. So some interesting stuff there in Teams to almost help more with the mental health and the monotony that, and the burnout. That was the other thing they talked about, or they're going to talk about, is just the burnout that people have experienced in this whole work from home environment. So those were some interesting announcements, because it's more Microsoft learning how much working from home is impacting people and trying to help out with that in some form or fashion, kind of within Teams and that Microsoft 365 space.
Yeah. most companies, you know, I think Microsoft is owning the software and delivering it. You know, they certainly see these impacts within their, you know, within their employees and, you know, kind of that whole community that they have to serve there, plus customers, right? Where yep. it does come out and manifest itself that way. You know, some of that stuff, it's like a virtual commute. Like, I get it. If you're pining for a commute, that's great, but it's not something I've ever missed in the last couple of years. Mindfulness is like take the dogs for a walk, right? But I think that's the point is, you know, making sure that you understand that it's okay to keep these blocks of time, you know, for yourself and for your own general well-being and sanity. Like I saw a great tweet the other day, which really hit home for me, in why do we still keep our mobile apps on our phones for things like email or Teams or whatever it happened to be? Because the expectation used to be, you know, when you were at work and you had all that stuff on your work PC or, you know, your work laptop, desktop, whatever it happened to be, that you were meant to respond to the work stuff while you were at work. But now that lots of us are working from home as well, do I really still need Teams on my phone? I don't actually know that I do because I still have Teams on all my laptops. So if I'm not in front of my laptop, technically I'm not working.
Right.
I don't need that stuff and need some of that noise. And I think that's a lot of where, you know, the mindfulness or, you know, Microsoft is going to categorize all this as, you know, insights that target your well-being. That's where a lot of that stuff's born out of. So, you know, can you give Cortana access to your calendar and can Cortana tell you when you should schedule focus time? Right. Is that a thing that you actually need and that you can, you know, make happen in your day-to-day schedule? And would that be better for you? Because then that drives into how you interact with Teams and your email and all the other things that exist out there. So it's good to see a lot of that stuff. Hopefully people can take advantage of it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a lot of people like you and I, frankly, have been working from home for years and years. I think I've been working from home for 12 years now, at least, if not longer. I think some of this stuff might help too with people that, like, there's a lot of people that have never worked from home before, and it's just an entirely new experience. And like you said, they don't yet have the thought or the concept of, you know what, it's okay to take my dog for a walk in the middle of the day, or it's okay to go downstairs and hang out and talk to my family for 10 or 15 minutes during the middle of a work day. And I think that's where some of this might come into.
Yeah.
But yeah, your whole app thing is, that's interesting. We could go on a whole tangent there because there's frankly times where I've thought about it. I'm like, do I really need a smartphone? It's great when I'm at conferences. Like when I'm traveling, absolutely. So I can respond to email on the go. But when I'm at home.
So just to contextualize that though, but when you're traveling for a conference, you're traveling for work.
Right. So it's that work concept.
So you're not in, yeah, you're not in bringing your laptop with you because it's a, quite frankly, a pain in your back and your rear end to carry it around all day, right? It's too heavy to have in the backpack with all the other stuff. That's why you have your mobile device with your
right,
email with and your stuff. Chats and all the other things on it. But, you know, to contextualize it and you bring that into home, when are you working when you're at home? Quite often when you're in front of your laptop, right? You might have this desire to work from another device or things occasionally,
right?
You know, unless you're in a role that, you know, requires your 24/7 attention, then maybe it's not a bad idea.
But even then, I've thought
disconnect
about like,
a little
do
bit.
I need a flip, like get a flip phone, go back to like the old school flip phone. So when I'm done for the day, I don't have to have my smartphone with me downstairs because I'm in the role too where I do consulting. Every once in a while, I do get an after hours call or alert from a client. Hey, this is down. We need help. If I have a phone and they can call it, but I don't have my smartphone, I'm not going to have, I mean, I've caught myself. It's a habit. Pop open your phone, just look at email when you have 5 minutes. If I had a flip phone that I could get a phone call, that's like, you know what? There's an emergency. Here's a phone call. Call me, but I'm not going to have be paying attention to text messages, to Twitter, to email, to any of that. Again, to get that separation from work and personal. I haven't done it yet, but it's a thought I've often had.
You're getting there and getting ready to go, huh?
Yes. So aside from that, there's also some Teams features. And this is some of the ones that, I mean, we've kind of seen, I don't know that these are necessarily new for everybody, but they're doing things like the custom layouts in meetings, which are going to allow you to do things in meetings like pin a meeting layout, essentially, or create a meeting layout that everybody will see. So instead of just your tile view or jumping to the whoever's speaking, because I'm sure we've all had those meetings where like the presenter's presenting and somebody coughs and isn't on mute and all of a sudden the video jumps over to them. It's like, no, just keep this video on the presenter. I don't want to see everybody else. Do things like have the presenter pinned, allow them to have like a floating head in front of their PowerPoint to talk. So a lot of features to really set up those meetings differently, not the broadcast or the live meetings, but just your normal everyday, let's jump on a meeting within our department or something like that. So those custom layouts to give those meetings a little bit better feel are coming and a little bit more control over what the video does for those. Breakout rooms, so that meeting organizers can split meeting participants up into small groups to have discussions. Meeting experiences are growing. So 1,000 people in a meeting now, 2,000 participants in a view-only meeting.
25,000 people in individual teams.
You know what this means we're getting closer to? What are we getting closer to, Scott?
There's definitely some scale things there.
Getting rid of,
what are we getting closer to?
Getting rid of Yammer, because participant lists will, or participant numbers will match. Another interesting one. So doing some consulting, I've wished we had this, and sometimes this is where I actually jump over to different technologies, is for meetings like customer presentations and other type of meetings, you're now going to be able to do attendee registration, automated emails to help with attendance, a reporting dashboard to help understand report or attendee engagement, and then tying in new production tools like NDI for use in Teams. So some of those two to make, just kind of bringing meetings to the next experience, to what your point was earlier about more of these incremental small changes. Nothing, we're not redoing Teams, but adding some of these nice features into Teams to expand how you can use it in different scenarios better.
Yeah. And if, you know, back to that, where do you get your information thing? You know, do you follow a bunch of, do you follow like the notification center and things like that to understand what's coming? You know, there's some folks you can follow on Twitter and you would have probably seen a lot around this, like NDI for Teams or breakout rooms. Like Jeff Teepers had a bunch of screenshots and things like that up on his Twitter feed. So there's places you can go to, you know, learn about some of this stuff, and maybe it's not as new when it pops out at Ignite.
Yep. The NDI stuff has actually been in the PowerShell commandlets for a while too now. Because
yes,
people
yeah.
watch random parameters and PowerShell commandlets to see what new features are coming out, right?
Some of us do, just to kind of see what's coming along the way there. So I'll actually put, there's the M365 community docs. I don't know if everybody is familiar with those, but you know, it's a community supported initiative that's actually hosted in docs.microsoft.com. They have an article in there called Follow Microsoft 365 on Social Media. And it calls out, you know, across these various kind of pillars of messaging and communications and content management and, you know, Power Platform, other apps development, things like that, interesting hashtags and accounts to follow on Twitter.
Fancy. I bet I'm not in that list because I'm not that interesting.
I think their threshold for, you know, putting somebody's name in there is they have to have 20,000 followers.
Oh, yeah. Okay, everybody that's at Ignite, go follow me so I can hit my 20,000 follower threshold. I'm a long ways away from that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that shows up on Twitter. Some good, some you don't want to read. I have been trying to filter out, tell Facebook and Twitter about certain things I don't want to see in my feed by starting to hide more stuff and see how well their AI works. So I can boil it down to just text stuff.
Not as well as you think it does.
No, let's just say I would love my feed to be only tech-related information.
let's keep going with team stuff here.
Okay. New search experience is coming.
Devolve. Oh, before we get to that, I thought one of the good ones was So there's going to be some announcements around improvements to one-to-one calls as well. I thought some of these were really good, including transcription, live captions, and the ability to record one-on-one calls. So you won't have to go schedule that meeting in Outlook just to have those features and get those ready to go for you. That I found that to be a big piece of friction. Like when I'm in a conversation with someone and I go, oh, hold on, let's go actually set up a meeting in Outlooks or in a channel someplace so that we can have all these features.
That one will be nice. There was something else. I can't find it in my document right now. It was like meeting recaps. Where was it? Breakout rooms. After a meeting in Teams, a recap. It was recaps with the meeting recording, transcript, chat, shared files, and more automatically taken. So if you do miss a meeting, you can get a quick recap of it, of all the information that was shared. It's going to be available in your Outlook calendar by going to the meeting event. That was another one that I thought was interesting, because there are times when you just can't make a meeting or you miss it for whatever reason and you just want to get a recap of everything in that meeting. And to be fair, it isn't always easy to find it. The fact that that will be right within your Outlook calendar and meeting. So this is going to be interesting too. And soon, so this is a sub point under there. Soon, meeting recordings will be automatically stored as files in SharePoint so they can be shared easily, compliantly with external participants. Doesn't this kind of defeat the purpose of Stream V2?
Shh.
I mean, I'm just going to leave that question out there. We can just end with that question, not end the podcast, but like, go watch the video and look at my face if you're listening on audio.
Yeah, no, you're thinking about it too hard.
Okay, it's my problem. Okay, sorry. Anything else in Teams you wanted to cover?
No, I think that's good. The thing I said, there's and you called out, there's certainly some scale things there, which are nice to see. So if you are in a larger organization and you've been struggling with some of the limitations of Teams, that'll be eased pretty soon here.
Yep. Yeah, and there are a few more small announcements that'll trickle in here. Again, I think there's a lot of stuff in Teams. I feel like there was a lot of development effort that was shifted to Teams, and there's just a lot of small tweaks and changes always going on within Teams.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff coming for Rooms experiences. There's going to be a bunch of new connectors for things. There's going to be a brand new Power Automate app inside of Teams.
Although that technically wasn't new, because that was part of Project Oakdale now, that was originally Dataflex.
Data Flex something data. Or other. That name, which shall not be recalled.
Yes.
Yeah, so some of that's out in public preview. You're going to see better ways to integrate and embed some of those apps and bots kind of within the Teams ecosystem. You mentioned search earlier.
Yeah, there's a new search experience powered by Microsoft Search. Messages, people, and files, faster, more intuitive, a better search page, AI-powered relevance. Essentially, it sounds like, because I don't know that Teams search right now is really powered by Microsoft Search or fully embedded in the rest of the Microsoft 365 search platform. Teams search is kind of, I mean, I would say it's there. I don't know that it's great. It works sort of most of the time.
Yeah. If you don't want to be able to get to what you're actually looking for, it works awesome.
Yeah. This sounds like they're just really working to integrate the search within Teams into Microsoft 365 search or Microsoft search. Make Microsoft search the only search engine across all of the products and also surface content from all of the products in Microsoft search. So that's kind of what I took away from that.
And that has a nice benefit in that now you can kind of search from where you're comfortable searching. So say like your Windows desktop search or a search inside of, SharePoint, maybe use Bing for work, things like that. Those are all going to target the same search index and you would have the same search results, you know, across all those things. I think that's pretty powerful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And guess where you can watch all of these Teams meetings now taking place, Scott?
Where can we watch them, Ben?
On your brand new 85-inch Surface hub.
Ah, just what I was looking
for. That is going to look beautiful on that wall behind you.
I was
going to
say, I can just replace the window. Like that, actually, it might work out better that way.
I've got a spot right, where's right here. Wouldn't it look good right there behind me?
Yeah. Yep, you just need a bigger wall.
So any podcast listeners that want to sponsor an 85-inch Surface Hub for both Scott and I, we will happily display your name on it on the wall in our podcast video every single episode if you send one to each of us. Hey, it was worth a shot.
You're always going for it. I mean, yeah. New Surface Hub, 7x7 grid view.
Whee! January 2021. I think you can start pre-ordering it as of Ignite. I have absolutely no idea how much it's going to cost, nor do I truthfully really want to know or care because I'm not going to be purchasing one.
Oh, come on. You can do it. Either that or you set up the nuc in the corner, you know, with Windows 10 Pro and go ahead and push out information the way you need to any TV.
Yeah. Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at intellijink.com/podcast. That's intelligink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. I don't know that there's a whole lot of other Microsoft 365 stuff that... Oh! Cortex, how could we forget about our good buddy Project Cortex?
Is Cortex back this year?
Sort of. So Project Cortex, brief history, Project Cortex was announced last year at Ignite in September, and it was going to be coming this year, as in like between last year's Ignite and this year's Ignite. And lo and behold, we still have Project Cortex. That was another, well, yeah. Anyways, that was an interesting announcement. Project Cortex is back in part this year. And now I have lost all of my syntax is the portion of Project Cortex that is being released. So a year later, we still do not have full Project Cortex in the form that it was meant to be released in, or it was supposed to be released in. And Microsoft has taken the approach of now Project Cortex is going to be delivered as multiple products. The first of those being SharePoint Syntex. So S-Y-N-T-E-X.
Yeah, Syntex, not tax.
Yes, yeah. There's just, yeah, S-Y-N-T-E-X. It's going to use advanced AI to automate and capture, ingest, and categorize content to accelerate, process, improve compliance, facilitate knowledge discovery and reuse, content understanding, kind of going to the whole content services aspect of SharePoint. So the way I read Project Syntex is it's like an advanced form of like a form recognizer AI service. It's essentially pulling in your document, capturing key content in it, and then it sounds like from there it can auto tag and apply metadata to your document.
Yeah.
So it's like automatic metadata.
Form recognizer without having to
define fields,
without having to code a model behind
it.
So throw some documents that are similar at it, have Syntex do its metadata extraction. And then if you like that model, use that model to automatically extract information from documents that are similar. Or not only extract information, potentially use Syntex to apply metadata across documents as well. So that I think that's kind of the exciting thing there. I don't know how it would work you know, if you're thinking about like no code AI models, exactly how that's going to manifest itself. Like, what if you do need to make like a down and dirty change to one of those AI models? Like, it's perfect for 99 of the fields on your 100 field form, but you need to fix the last one somehow. It'll be interesting to see how that manifests itself.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm also curious to see how it applies. Like, how do you choose how it auto applies metadata? Is it going to be like one field where we're essentially doing hashtags in a single field where it pulls out the key concepts and just puts all of those in one field? Are we going to be able to somehow have 10 or 15 different fields and train it to put different metadata in different fields? That'll be interesting. Licensing will be interesting. The whole model thing is, it reminds me of a book I was reading, and I can't remember the service, but it was, you may remember this. I think it was China or something had like an AI social bot that you can interact with via Twitter. And they tried to roll it out in the US, and everybody like tweet stormed it with like inappropriate political, all these tweets. And they essentially retrained this AI bot on Twitter to be like the worst version of ourselves. Do you remember this fiasco? It got shut down in like 24 hours.
Yeah. It was a Microsoft AI chatbot, and it was released to Twitter. I'll just quote a headline from The Verge at the time this occurred. Twitter taught Microsoft's AI chatbot to be a racist asshole in less than a day.
Yeah.
And that was way back in 2016. And those things still occur today.
Like, what happens if you dump all of like a whole bunch of bogus content into SharePoint and this AI bot goes crazy on it? Like, can you manipulate your SharePoint auto tagging?
Well, I mean, hopefully you hope you've got adults working in your organization, but your mileage may vary there.
Yeah. And to your point, then if something like that happens, like what approaches do you have to go in and fix it and say, ignore the training from this SharePoint site or from these documents or...
Yep. So there's probably a couple of interesting things here just inside the branding alone. So syntax not being called just syntax, but SharePoint syntax. And so now it's very aligned to the SharePoint brand and, you know, drives to documents and things that are stored inside of SharePoint. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of continues to grow and does it stay a SharePoint brand? And also what some of the other new services are that are going to be a part of Cortex. So, I mean, originally, you know, at a high level, Cortex was a lot about these models that could go and understand your content automatically and then be able to surface that back to you in meaningful ways through like knowledge hubs and things like that. So are those hubs and kind of aggregates of the information that Cortex derives or Syntex derives, I guess now, are those going to be separate products, separate licenses? I think it'll be interesting to see where some of that goes.
Right. And it does say, so on the licensing standpoint, I did find this, SharePoint Syntex will be available to purchase for Microsoft 365 commercial customers on October 1. Whether that means purchase regardless of what SKU you have, like do I have to purchase this even if I have Microsoft 365
like as
E5?
An right. Yeah.
Is it going to be an add-on to literally every single Microsoft 365 plan? Or is it available to purchase like... it'll be included in Microsoft 365 E5. It'll be an add-on to all the E3 plans. We don't know that yet, but I wouldn't anticipate this is going to just, well, obviously it's not going to be, everybody just gets this as a new feature.
It'll be gated in some way.
Yeah. And like you said, it'll be interesting because it's SharePoint. Like, I'm assuming some of the stuff that's going to be left out of this is that this only seems to apply to SharePoint content. Like, it's not going to apply to, because I think the original idea of Cortex was it would apply to content in your email, to content in Teams, in terms of chats and conversations. Yeah. This sounds like it is only going to be SharePoint files, is the way I read this out of the gate.
Yep. SharePoint files, and specifically files that are able to be crawled within the existing search engine.
Yep. And then automatically apply. And it does talk about, too, being able to automatically apply sensitivity labels and retention labels for compliance, too. So we are at least getting a portion of Cortex this year, but it is not all of Cortex is coming, and it appears to be that it's going to be broken out into multiple products released over the course of who knows how long.
Some indeterminate amount of time.
Yes. Well, and the nice thing is they can probably also get people stop talking about Project Cortex and maybe as much and start talking about syntax, and they at least have hit that first milestone of some aspect of this has made it out of the door. So, okay, now I think I'm done with Microsoft 365 stuff.
Yeah?
Sure. I can be. I mean, there was 71 pages. Do you have some Azure stuff you want to talk about? This is going to be a long podcast, or we can break it up into multiple.
Well, stuff happens. I think there's a couple things that I think are important to call out around Azure and some of the movements there. So, you know, if you're in the hybrid space or you've been working with HCI, things like that, there's tons of new stuff to potentially look at with Azure Stack, Azure Stack Edge, new devices there, HCI, and also Azure Arc. Like if anybody has been into Arc at all and doing management of their kind of Kubernetes plane and integrating Arc in that way, lots of the other things that got announced with Arc, like data services on-prem, things like that, that's all coming together now, and it's going to be available in preview. So, you know, it's certainly encouraged to go take a look at that if that's a space that you play in. Personally, I think there were some great announcements around Azure infrastructure in general. So you mentioned, you know, earlier in these times where these services need to grow at an accelerated rate because of all the extra traffic and things coming into them. You know, how is not only Microsoft handling that, but how can you as a customer take advantage of some of that scale and resiliency within the Azure platform? If you've been waiting around for availability zones in a couple of regions, that roadmap is more public than it's ever been now. So you'll be able to see where availability zones are coming to and potentially preview or GA dates around those. There's going to be a couple new regions that are picking those up. So specifically Canada Central and Australia East. And that brings the total number of AZ-enabled regions, availability zone-enabled regions, up to 14 at this point. You know, with certainly more in the pipeline beyond that. So that's kind of exciting to, you know, see that there's a continued investment in building out data centers and making them better. One of the other things that's also going to make data centers a little bit better is the ability to move your resources between regions, so between data centers, between zones, things like that, and hopefully more easily meet some of, you know, your data residency needs or in general where you want to be. Like you might have landed in a given region because it was the only region that had the service at the time, and over, you know, the course of months or years, whatever it happens to be, all of a sudden that Azure service became available in more regions, and it turns out you didn't really want to be in East US, you really wanted to be in East US too. You know, it could be something like as pedantic as that. So there's going to be a new service called Azure Resource Mover, which is going to help everyone move their resources between regions, which if you are familiar with kind of the way to quote unquote move a resource today, you can't change the region that a resource is in. You can only change the resource group that it's in. So this will allow you to have a Microsoft approved service that's going to help you get along with that, which I thought that was kind of really cool. So that'll bring things like single pane of glass to manage your migration. That should greatly reduce complexity, because if a service is able to be moved through Resource Mover, that's one less thing that you have to touch and manually move.
Yeah, this one's going to be interesting because I'd imagine there's a lot more work that went into the back end of this than people could estimate. Because you think about, well, if I'm going to move resources, I have to make sure the resources I'm moving are actually available in the region I'm moving to. So I'd imagine there's got to be some checking there. There's also like certain things in storage. If I remember right, the URL to access storage, like DNS entries and stuff, are region specific. Like some
storage,
those,
storage is a global namespace,
is it?
But some, yep. But some things are regional. So if I'm thinking about maybe like compute, so context of a virtual machine, yep. If my virtual machine has a public IP on it and I've associated a DNS name, like an Azure provided DNS name with that public IP, that would be a regional DNS name. So, you know, it'd be myvm.eastus.cloudapp.
That's probably the one I was thinking of where I saw it.
So things like that, yeah, if you're dependent on those as part of your move, you know, Resource Mover might not be able to help you do that because it would have to create a new VNet on the other side that matches, a new PIP, and that's going to have a new DNS name, things like that. But hopefully it can start to call some of that information out for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, heck, if it can make moving a VM easier, like if it can make the management of getting my managed disk for my virtual machine from region A to region B, that's a huge win right there, right? It's just one less thing I have to worry
about. Right. If you can at least get the disks over and then just build a new VM and point it at that disk and all that.
Yep. Or maybe like a SQL database, right? Right. Say you've got like an Azure SQL database, you're running in that PaaS service. If that can move me again from A to B and do my backup and restore my database and all that for me automatically, that's a huge win.
Yep. Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. Okay, so can I ask you about one that I noticed in here and I didn't highlight because I was trying to figure out exactly what this meant. It's by availability zones. If you're looking at the Book of News, it's on page 14. Azure Orbital, a new managed service that provides access to physical satellite communication capabilities to process and analyze data in Microsoft Azure, taking advantage of low latency global fiber network when working with large satellite data sets. Azure Orbital is now available to select customers in private preview. What does this mean? Like, what is this?
You just said it. It's a new managed service that provides access to physical satellite communication capabilities. I mean, off the cuff, I mean, the first time I ever would have saw this was in the Book of News here. So I can only speculate based on what's in here. But, you know, if you take this at face value, there's an extension of satellite networks that you'll have connectivity to through Azure. So you'll have, in some way, the ability to get telemetry back and do some things for it. I mean, really, I have no idea what's going on here. If it's part of maps or, you know, geospatial, there's a bunch of stuff going on there.
Well, that's what, like, I've read this over and over again, and it was, like, satellite communication capabilities to process and analyze data, but then taking advantage where, yeah, it sounds like it's something around processing data sets from satellites.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, what satellite data would you process?
Well, so let's think like maybe like geospatial kind of things, okay. Right? So if I'm a company that launches satellites to take imagery of the Earth, right? I'm NASA and I need to take pictures of planet Earth. You know, if I have to pump all those pictures all the way back to my data center first and then move them over to Azure to do processing with them, that's an extra hop that I have to take along the way. But what if I had the ability to send my data straight to specific Azure data centers and do what I need to do there? So I think satellite imagery is probably like one of the first ones that comes to mind, because that's high resolution imagery that is then quite often transformed into multiple formats and varying levels of detail and then stored in a bunch of different ways. I think super helpful for mapping, probably for just all up like telemetry for from satellites, right? Like satellites are like any other device. They've got a bunch of meters that are coming out of them on a very consistent basis, right? Like, you know, what's my path? What's my actual height in orbit? How am I maintaining orbit? You know, do I have to look at like degradation or like a decaying orbit, things like that? There's all sorts of fun stuff you could do.
So why didn't they just say Azure Orbital lets you send your satellite data straight to an Azure data center?
Well, because it's probably not every piece of satellite data. Private preview with select customers means it's only for certain types of services and certain types of folks. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what else is there.
All right. Okay, now that I've derailed you from whatever you were thinking about talking about next.
No, that's okay. I thought you were going to ask like something about something I might actually know about, but no.
No, why would I do that? That's not any fun.
You just went off the rails.
I just went way off the rails. Okay.
Went off the rails on that one. All right, well, let's keep talking about kind of management and having single panes of glass into things.
Yes.
So there was Resource Mover, help me move my resources between regions. There's also a new Azure service coming to preview that's going to be called Azure Auto Manage. And Auto Manage is there to help us as customers just reduce our day-to-day overhead with thinking about virtual machine operations. So, and specifically Windows Server virtual machine operations, right? Just to kind of like couch that out and get it to where it needs to be. We're not talking about like Linux servers or
right.
non-Windows Server VMs in this first implementation. But if you think about virtual machine management today, stuff's all over the place, right? There's Azure Backup, which is living in its own service. You might have recommendations inside of Security Center. You might have policy that affects your virtual machines.
Right. Well, there's a bunch of stuff in like Azure Automate around config management and tracking. And
so change tracking and update management as well. There's a lot of friction or kind of mental overhead, right? To figure out where things are going on.
Yep.
So Auto Manage is meant to help out with a lot of that. So if you're somebody who understands how to manage your virtual machines, your Windows virtual machines at scale today, and that's something that you already do, Azure Auto Manage might not be the service for you. But if you're somebody who's, you know, just getting into virtual machines and you're going, I don't know how to run any of this stuff. I don't know what's going on. And I just want it to be safe, secure, performant, and configured in the right way, then Auto Manage might be something you want to take a look at. So it'll do things like take a virtual machine, enroll it in backup for you automatically without you having to remember and go and configure a policy to onboard all your VMs into backup. It will also onboard them into Security Center, the free version of Security Center, or if you're associating it with a paid Security Center implementation, it'll obviously associate it with that, and also bring in things like update management, like you mentioned. And really what it's doing is think of it as almost like an advisor service, but it's an advisor that's able to step in and perform actions for you based around recommendations that come out of the Azure Cloud Adoption Framework. So as things come into the Cloud Adoption Framework and kind of new rules or new ways to operate come out there, they roll into Auto Manage, and then Auto Manage makes sure that those are applied to your VMs and you have insights into the overall state of, you know, your virtual machine estate that's out there and know what's enrolled in backup, what's not, you know, where is this particular virtual machine at in its life cycle, things like that.
Yeah, this one, I'm curious to see how this one works because I definitely see some benefits to this, especially if you can define some of those different desired configurations. All my IIS servers, this is what firewall port should be open. This is what backup, this is how they should be backed up, all of this. There's always some trepidation that I get to when I start hearing about stuff like services being auto-managed, just because I always think back to automatically applying security updates to servers and some of the nightmares those have caused me. But I do, again, I feel like I'm curious to see how it works and to kind of walk my way into it. Like something like Azure Backup and Azure Security Center, making sure they're enrolled. it's not going to probably break a VM. It's making sure that they're secure. Something like all of a sudden this is automatically opening and closing ports on different VMs. There could be a little bit more risk there. So kind of how does this work and what actions are automatically taken versus being reported on? Just a little bit more detail on how all of this is actually going
to
work.
Yeah, ultimately, it seems like it's going to be an overarching service. Like Security Center is not going away. Backup's not going away. Policy's not going away. This is just kind of a super set of functionality that ties it all together. Yeah, in a single place. I think the other thing you have to do is you have to remove yourself from that space of security updates are going to bork my server every time. Like you've got some potential overhead that comes from managing SharePoint servers there, right? Where it just like breaks things and it doesn't go well. But you know, there's lots of folks that just run Windows Server vanilla and it works for them and does what it needs to do.
Right.
And they might not know what else needs to be there. So I think that's good to see.
I'm tainted you're also by SharePoint see is what you're telling me.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. a bunch. Let's do one more here.
Okay.
So you're also going to see Windows Admin Center, which has been available in various forms on top of Windows Server, coming to the Azure portal as well. So if you're managing Windows servers, again, Windows servers specifically, you know, and you're all Azure, you know, if you wanted Windows Admin Center, you might have actually been standing up like your jump box and your management box and putting Windows Admin Center on that and then managing your VMs that way. But now that'll be available directly through the Azure portal, which is nice to see.
Yeah, that one is a cool one. Can I do one more after this?
Sure.
So this was another Windows Virtual Desktop, because I've actually been doing some stuff more with Windows Virtual Desktop lately. And some of the things that kind of tie Azure and Windows Virtual Desktop and Microsoft 365 together is you are not going to have Microsoft Endpoint Manager support. So a lot of your device management, Windows 10 management for that Windows 10 multi-session to really help you when it comes to those Windows Virtual Desktops to manage them, secure them more. Previously, and I didn't even realize this till I saw this announcement that apparently Endpoint Manager wasn't actually supported on those Windows 10 multi-session Windows virtual desktop environments. It was more for just your local Windows 10 machines. But there's a lot of stuff, and there's some other announcements too coming around with those virtual desktop and support there as that service is starting to ramp up as well in Azure.
Yeah, it's maturing rapidly.
Yes, I think because COVID, I think that has a large part to play with this Windows Virtual Desktop environment as well. At least that's some of the scenarios I've been seeing with it recently. So I think, does that wrap up most of what we wanted to talk about?
That probably wraps up most of your announcements.
All right. So there are our announcements from Ignite. Again, some of the details around these are going to be out already by the time you hear this. So if you didn't catch some of these and you're interested in them, go back, find session recordings for them, go find blog posts. We do have links to where the blog posts.
I will. I'll include links in the show notes to everything that we talked about. So it's a little hard for me to understand if they're actually going to work later because they're not live yet. But, you know, they're all the AKMS URLs, so they should work.
And if they don't work, send us a tweet, leave a comment, and maybe we can go find the correct one. Yes, it is scott@... and then we can go fix it or get you the right URL. So hopefully I'm sure we'll have some more episodes coming up here post-Ignite as we get more details and get our hands on some of the stuff and the ability to play with it. Or if you are listening and there is one of these topics you want to hear about in more detail, send us a message. Let us know. And we can try to dive into a specific topic and have an episode on a single one of these as it becomes available. And again, we can play with it a little more.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Ben.
But for now, go rest up, Scott. You got a 48-hour marathon coming up starting tomorrow.
Ready, set.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Scott.
All right. Bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.